Hello, I'm Blake Gregory. This is number 0205, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0205. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet actor Stephen Christopher Parker, who is best known for his role as young Dr. Harold Zelinsky on the hit NBC television series ER.
The funny part is, the casting director, John Levy, did not want to see me. For the first couple days while they were pitching me, he refused to see my audition because he said he's too young to play a 19-year-old doctor. And I was 20 years old at the time, so I just looked too young, I guess, for the part. And finally he relented, I went in, did an audition, did a couple callbacks, and that was it. It was a very straightforward process. I just got lucky enough that I was in the right place, right time.
Andrew Vazek is the night sky guy, is back to talk about what's making news in science and space.
What's in the news this week is the largest baby star that's ever been detected. It's within our Milky Way galaxy. It's weighing in right now. This massive stellar baby is weighing in at 500 times the mass of our own sun.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and the devil made me do this on this edition of Book Banter with a biography of the late Flip Wilson. So honey, what you see is what you get very soon on the Stuff File Program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0205, was Blake Gregory, the TV coordinator for Just for Laughs, the largest and greatest comedy festival in the world. Thank you very much, Blake, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, as we often like to keep track on what goes on in that wacky country, North Korea, we have to check out the business website Quartz. Now, they reported in June that a popular consumer item in North Korea's perhaps improving economy is the refrigerator, made in China and increasingly available as a reward to stellar performers among civil servants and other elites. The appliances, however, cannot reliably store food because the country's electric grid is so frequently offline and are mostly just status symbols. One item, Quartz says, often gets displayed in the refrigerator? Books. I guess they occasionally get to read a chilling mystery. Like, when will the power be turned back on? An atheist church, yeah, you heard me say that, in Lake Charles, Louisiana, run by lapsed Pentecostal Jerry DeWitt, conducts periodic services with many of the trappings expected by the pious, except for the need to believe in a supreme being. Such churches, and I'm doing air quotes now, can help soothe the biological need for survival and avoidance of loneliness by congregational rituals such as celebrating a Sabbath and in helping to find the meaning in something other than oneself. For example, atheist Siegfried Gold praised a righteous or rigorous prayer routine, I should say, not righteous, rigorous prayer routine, beseeching a vivid goddess he created in overcoming his weight problem. Yeah, geez. If people need to gather, they can just go to the mall. I mean, has anyone seen the irony in this story? I mean, an atheist church. Come on. Anyone? Bueller? Yeah. Anyway, speaking of ironies, in June, a fighting in the Syrian civil war spread to its west, threatening archaeological digs and already recovered artifacts near the ancient city of Hamukar, which is the site of history's earliest known urban warfare about 5,500 years ago. See? Your mother was right. So were your teachers. If we don't study history, we are doomed to repeat it. Robert Dugan, age 47, a full-time patrolman for the Delaware County, Pennsylvania Park Police, was charged in June with illegally impersonating a police officer. Oh, let me explain. According to authorities in Brookhaven, Pennsylvania, Dugan had accosted a woman double-parked outside her home to pressure her to move her car, but she refused. Dugan allegedly claimed he was an Upland Borough police officer with authority to write parking citations and make arrests, which he did not actually have. So basically what we have here is a cop gets busted for pretending to be a cop. Again, like our previous two stories, that's irony. The British company Paw Seasons has created a holiday for dogs, surely to appeal to guilt-ridden owners who leave them behind on their own holidays, priced at the equivalent of $73,000, consisting of a private suite for 2 weeks with dog-friendly Hollywood movies, trips to the beach, surfing lessons, spa and grooming treatment, including pedicure, by Harrods, no less, outfits from Louis Vuitton, Bottega, Veneta, and Mulberry, and the pièce de résistance, a personal doghouse created in the image of the owner's own house. Wow. $73,000. Two-week holiday. Clearly, this is for people who have more dollars than cents. I tell you, it's good to be a dog in the first world. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an elderly Wisconsin shop owner drove off a knife-wielding would-be thief when she refused to hand over cash and instead offered him Tootsie Rolls. He said, "Walk in the back of the store," and she said, "I'm not walking nowhere." That's a double negative, but hey, she's 96, she can say what she wants. "I'm standing right here," said Margarita Marge Wolf, who, as I said, is a 96-year-old owner of Wolf's Grocery Store in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Then the masked man ordered her to open the cash register. She said, "I'm not opening up the cash register, and that's it. I'm not opening it. You can have all the Tootsie Rolls you want, but I'm not opening the cash register." The man then brandished a 3-inch pocket knife. Then Marge said, "I'll press a button and I'll have somebody here in seconds." She said the thug looked around nervously, noticed a security camera, grabbed his knife, and fled. Wolf, who has owned the store for more than 50 years, said she refused to give over the money because it's hers. Can't argue with that. This is a woman not to be messed with. I mean, the guy didn't even get his Tootsie Rolls. Okay, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Stephen Christopher Parker is an actor who is best known for his 11-episode stint as Dr. Harold Zelinsky on the hit NBC series ER. Since then, he's also been in such shows as NCIS, Rizzoli and Isles, and more. And while he might not be a household name, he certainly has a very recognizable face and is a very busy actor. Stephen joins us on the line right now via Skype-to-Skype communications from Los Angeles. Hi, Stephen.
I really wish I could carry you around to auditions. That was a great talk-up. So.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Let's go back to when you were doing ER.
All right. What do you want to know?
This is a television show that had been on by the time you got there for several years, a well-oiled machine, crew working together. When you come in, not only do you have to know all that medical jargon that you have to be able to spit out, but it's like coming into somebody's cocktail party late. Was it very intimidating?
Yeah. It was extremely intimidating because basically, you know, everyone who'd worked on there, the extras, the crew, the cast, most of them had been there. The cast comes in and out, but the crew had been there all 15 years. They knew each other by first last name basis. They had pool parties together. I guess kind of got thrown in as the nerdy kid next door and was expected to just fall in place with this very, like you said, well-oiled machine that had gotten used to each other's, you know, movements and could predict what each other was going to do. It was a very humbling experience for the first couple episodes. So,
how did you get the gig?
Oh. So I got an audition for my agent, and the funny part is the casting director, John Levy, did not want to see me. For the first couple days while they were pitching me, he refused to see my audition because he said he's too young to play a 19-year-old doctor, and I was 20 years old at the time. So I just looked too young, I guess, for the part. And finally he relented. I went in, did an audition, did a couple callbacks, and that was it. It was a very straightforward process. I just got lucky enough that I was in the right place, right time. So
had you not did you not do a previous episode as another character?
Yeah, actually, in 2000, and I think it was 5 or 4, I did a two-line co-star playing Gus, a patient who couldn't stop vomiting, and then I got hired back in 2007 to be a doctor. So,
okay, so flash forward, you've also done films like Rebound, Juno, Little Miss Sunshine, but you could also be seen in television commercials like DiGiorno Pizza.
Yeah, DiGiorno Pizza, that ran for 4 years. It's funny, my career, as it breaks down, I've done 30-odd hours of television. I've done, like 18 different movie parts, but my whole career breaks down to that 15-second DiGiorno Pizza commercial that people go, oh, you're the DiGiorno guy, yeah!
is that the thing you get most recognized for?
These days, I get ridiculously recognized for that. People come up, and the funny part is, I shouldn't say this on the air, but they think it's Pizza Hut always. So I guess it works for Pizza Hut if you're so.
Now, I also understand that you have been a contestant on The Price is Right.
I was. I got on in for my 21st birthday. My family and I went. I didn't mention I was an actor because I didn't. I actually really physically was. I've been a fan of the show for since I was in grade school. And I badly wanted to get picked, just extremely badly. So I may have fudged my credentials on my what I did for a living when they asked me. So they picked me. I ended up winning $1,200 in home accessories. So,
but as I said in the introduction, while you might not be a household name as an actor, you certainly have a recognizable face, and you appeared on The Price is Right after you did ER and some other things. So how could they not have known that?
Through sheer luck. I cannot believe I got through the... Because they interview every person that shows up to the taping just to see who has the best personality, who they want to mix and match to be contestants. I blatantly avoided telling them I was an actor, but they didn't do their fact check. They didn't, so I got on stage. What are you going to do about it?
Okay, so you're on The Price is Right in January of 2010. That's post-Facebook, post-Twitter. When this thing airs, people must have said, wait a minute, isn't that the doctor from ER? Or the pizza guy?
I got so many phone calls from my friends and family. And also, I just curiously checked the internet chat rooms. And there was this whole debate going on online about, those guys who were saying it's a hoax. They hire actors to be on to lose their game so they don't have to give away. There was this whole conspiracy that went on. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life, where people were getting really angry about an actor being a contestant because they thought it might be rigged. They thought, there was some foul play. It was just crazy, so...
Is acting something you've always wanted to do?
I do not remember a time where I did not want to be an actor. I was one of those kids that watched Barney and said, I could do it so much better than those kids. So,
you probably do it much, much better than Barney.
Barney's has seen better days. So.
Absolutely. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Littleton, Colorado. It's sort of the most infamous town in Colorado these days. So.
So,
for unfortunate reasons. So.
So with your desire to be an actor growing up in Littleton, Colorado, was your family very supportive of the idea, or did they think this was something you'd outgrow, or what?
They were it's funny. My mom and dad, for the first couple years, thought it's just a phase. He's really interested. I'm sure he'll have 4 or 5 other phases before he turns 18. But unfortunately, I never got another phase. I just always stuck with it. I was incredibly passionate. Incredibly wanted to learn more and more about it, wanted to get deeper involved. I begged my parents to take me to LA for 3 months for a pilot season to try to see my luck, see what would happen. And 3 months became 13 years. So.
Well, wait a minute. How old were you when you begged your parents for that opportunity?
I was 12 years old, and my parents very reluctantly, very nervously took me to LA for 3 months. I got an agent. I got some good attention. 3 years later, I booked Rebound. I was probably, 15, 16 when that happened. Then rebounds snowballed into other roles. I started doing co-stars in television, and then it's 13 years later. I'm almost 25 years old, and it just keeps rolling. So,
and if I'm not mistaken, at the time of 12, you also wrote your first screenplay?
Yes. I should preface that it was probably garbage, but I, you know, so.
Hey, but something to be said for the attempt. I still have all the stuff I wrote when I was 12. I don't share it with anybody, but I got it.
But I've been a writer also. I've been trying to facilitate that in some aspects. You know, it's a whole different game. I'm not as skill set involved in writing. I haven't devoted as much time to it, but it's something I've always, you know, been interested in. So
now you've also, and people can check this out on YouTube, you've also got some short films out there, right?
I do. I some very minuscule short films I produced. We produced one called Bible Cliff Notes, which was the Bible told in short satirical segments, old Bible stories. We did one called The Real Imaginary World, which was a spoof on the TV show The Real World, but with imaginary fictional characters like Santa Claus and Easter Bunny living in one house together. So just fun stuff like that, you know?
And who are the folks you do these with? Is it the same core group of friends?
Yeah, I have a core group of working actors that I do these with. My producing partner, Jacqueline Friedlander, and I are actually in the midst of producing and raising funding for our very first feature film. So that's my brand new endeavor right now.
Well, that was leading to my next question, and that is, what are you working on, and what are your goals? What do you want to do? Do you want to star in a big film? Do you want to direct in a big film? Or do you want to do a television series? What are your goals?
Well, to answer the beginning part of your question, what I'm working on right now, I am currently a regular on Fish Hooks, which is a Disney cartoon animated series. Fridays at 8 p.m. If anybody asking, it's about fish in high school. I play the character of a Jumbo Shrimp. We're going into our third season. I think we just officially aired the first episode of our third season, and I'm producing this film called Wizard Complex, which is it's Lars and the Real Girl meets Harry Potter, about a young boy who mistakenly believes he has magical powers. So
after doing
Yes.
go ahead
no that was it.
Okay.
If people want to check it out, they can go to wizardcomplexmovie.com for my shameless self-promotion plug of this interview. So
give the plug again. What is it?
It's a wizardcomplexmovie.com for anyone that wants to check out any more information about it. So,
excellent. Now, having done things like ER and the DiGiorno commercial, do you find that casting directors try to pigeonhole you as, you know, the nerdy guy?
Yeah, I've played about every type of nerd you can look at. I played, you know, basketball playing nerd, doctor nerd, gay nerd. I've literally done the gambit. Hollywood's kind of a weird animal because they like to be able to place you in molds. If you don't quite fit a mold, it's extremely harder because for whatever reason, if they can see it in their heads, you just have an easier time. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of Hollywood is just, are you selling what they're buying that day? So, you know?
I don't know. I think you could be a 25-year-old Bond villain. How about that?
Hey, make the phone call. I would love it.
people can do you have a website that you can share besides wizardcomplexmovie.com?
I'm currently redesigning my website, but when it's back up, you can check it out. It's going to be www.steven, spelled with a V, christopherparker.com. So.
Excellent. Steven, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure talking to you, Peter. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Actor Steven Christopher Parker. The website he mentioned for his film, Wizard Complex, is wizardcomplexmovie.com. When his website is up and running again, you can find him at stephenchristopherparker.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0205, and you'll find the links that Stephen was talking about.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more. Please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, about space exploration and interesting stories from the heavens. And Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter. Of course, there's also an idiot of the day. And right here, lots more Stuff File news on a program brought to you also on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A French post office employee had the fright of her life when a meter-long, that's 3.3 feet, by the way, a meter-long python slithered quietly out of a parcel and rubbed against her. The woman was alone in the post office in a small village in eastern France one Friday evening when she felt the chilling caress and screamed for help. Firemen caught the fugitive reptile and discovered a second one in the parcel. The pair were identified by a vet as ball pythons, non-aggressive snakes that coil up into a tight ball when threatened. They were then donated to a nearby zoo. Ball pythons are popular with snake enthusiasts as pets, but are also a protected species for which owners need a legal certificate stating that they had not taken them from the wild. Customs officers raided the home address in France of the parcel sender, where they found no certificates, but two other snakes, a stuffed caiman and a stuffed turtle, which the owner had been trying to sell over the internet. The post office stressed that its terms and conditions clearly forbade the shipping of animals live or dead. Not even stuffed? Really? I bet she won't be working alone at night in the post office for a while. That's all I have to say about her. Police allege that a man approached a car in a parking lot in Geelong, Victoria, Australia, and held up the 22-year-old driver. The man allegedly held a knife to the driver's throat and demanded she give him the vehicle. Then the man, who by the way was 64 years of age, allegedly put his walker into the car, drove a short distance, and got out to load in other bags. The shocked woman called police. Then, when officers arrived, he was still loading the bags. He was arrested and charged with one count of armed robbery. A Geelong senior constable, Paul Mitchell, described the case as the most bizarre incident he had encountered on the job. Well, at least the geezer's new accommodations will probably cost less than a nursing home. Food might be a little better, though. Hard to tell sometimes. After a robbery at Bank of America in Grand Rapids, Michigan, police released a photo of the suspect to the media. A man recognized the woman in the photo and called police with her name and location. She was his mother, Deanne Sanders, age 53, and she was at his house. Police arrested Sanders, and she allegedly confessed to the robbery during an interview with FBI agents and a Kent County Sheriff's detective. Saunders further stated that she was stressed about problems with her husband, causing her to have crack cocaine addiction-related issues. The robbery note had demanded, by the way, $2,500 for her children and grandchildren, and bank records show that her total take was $1,092. Apparently her son didn't want any crack. I guess you sometimes have to just say no to mom. When she gets out of jail, whenever that might be, can you just picture the happy homecoming reunion, perhaps the next Thanksgiving at their house? Oh, they'll just think back at this time and laugh and laugh and laugh. Well, maybe not. One more story we have for you before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Authorities in Florida said an intoxicated woman who crashed a sport utility vehicle into a tree was allegedly trying to hit her ex-boyfriend. Collier County Sheriff's deputies said investigators responded to a call from the neighborhood at around 2:15 a.m. and saw Veronica Doctor, age 45, walking away from the driver's side of the vehicle and appearing to have trouble balancing. Deputies said Doctor smelled strongly of alcohol and refused to speak to them. A friend in the passenger seat of the black GMC SUV told deputies that Doctor had driven to her ex-boyfriend's house, where the former couple argued. The ex-boyfriend was contacted and told deputies that Doctor started driving the vehicle in circles in his front yard, I guess he's doing donuts, when he refused to answer the door at around 2 a.m., and he went out to confront her about being drunk. Now, see, that's his first mistake. If you know the woman drinks, and you know she's drunk, and she's doing donuts in your front yard, in a GMC SUV, perhaps going outside is not the best idea you can have at that moment. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, he then said that the man then said he attempted to walk away and end the argument, and that she chased him with the vehicle. He said Doctor struck the tree while attempting to run him down. Doctor's blood alcohol content was measured at 0.259 at a local hospital, well over the legal limit of 0.08. And considering they took her to a hospital, I'm sure it was even higher at the time of the incident. But I digress. Doctor was charged with aggravated assault and driving under the influence. I think I'm beginning to understand why this couple broke up, at least from his point of view. Okay, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Science writer Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, is back on the program to talk about space and science and give us some news of what's going on beyond our atmosphere. He joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program. A couple of things I want to talk about. I actually saw you talking about them on television. One of them was the baby star. And what exactly is a baby star?
Well, the technical term that astronomers use are called protostars. And that's basically a star that's just being born. And, you know, when astronomers talk about stars, they affectionately basically talk about them as in terms of a lifespan that they have. Stars, like our own sun, are born, they live, and then they die. Except their lifetimes are not measured in decades. Instead, they're measured in literally hundreds of million years or billions of years. And in what's in the news this week is basically the largest baby star that's ever been detected. It's within our Milky Way galaxy. And it's weighing in right now. This massive stellar baby is weighing in at 500 times the mass of our own sun, and it's sitting within this. It's sitting within this gas cloud. It's sort of swaddled in this blanket of cloud of gas and dust that it was born from, and it's kind of interesting because we're kind of starting to put a picture together of how stars are born. Doesn't matter what size, be they small ones like our sun or monster ones like the one that we're talking about today, they're born within a giant cloud of gas and dust that sort of gravitationally begins to collapse on itself and forming clumps of matter. And as this matter sort of gets, you know, these clumps start growing, as their mass becomes larger, they have a larger gravitational pull, and they start pulling in even more stuff ever faster. And at one point, the mass is so large that the pressure builds up at the center of these clumps of matter, and thermonuclear reactions ignite the gas at the center of these clumps, and they begin to shine. And that's what we call a star. A star begins to shine. So all stars, including our sun, were born in ancient times like that. And what we're seeing this week, what astronomers announce, is that they've actually been able to peer into one of these gas clouds and have found the most massive baby star they've ever seen.
Now, does this baby star, as they're calling it, does it have planets surrounding it, or is that an evolution that takes place later?
Exactly. It's probably something that will take place at a later date. But what's interesting at this point is that this star being so massive, the lifetime of this star will probably not make it conducive for any kind of habitable planets, or maybe even possibly very many planets to form at all. That's because it's so large. The lifetimes of stars that are at, you know, 10 times more massive than the sun and beyond, and remember, in this case, we're talking around 500 times the mass of the sun, their lifetimes are measured in tens of millions of years. Now, that sounds like a long time, Peter, but tens of millions of years is really short compared to the lifetime of our own sun, which is already measured in billions of years. We think the sun is approximately 5 billion years old, and it's middle-aged, so it has another 4 to 5 billion years to go before it dies. And so this star, you would get, basically, if you want to do it in the Hollywood-style classification, it lives fast and furious.
Or if you want to use another human term, apparently the bigger you are, the shorter your lifespan.
Right. And so this giant really is just living very fast, burning the gas that it has inside very quickly, very furiously, very bright star. And its lifespan is just measured in tens of millions of years. And that's just not enough time for planets to really begin to form.
Well, let me ask you this, because you've tossed out the name baby star. And you put that idea in my head now of a baby being born and what a human being goes through. I don't think I've ever asked you this question in all the years we've talked about either stars or planets. Through the course of their lifetimes, either or, stars or planets, do they ever change in size? Do they actually ever physically grow?
Well, yeah, I mean, and especially in this case, right, what we're talking about with this massive star is, and this is what's so interesting also, is that it is very massive, but it's still growing. At this very young stage of evolution, and even in planets, which come way after once the star itself is formed, the family of planets around the star, are born later at a later time. They are growing when they're still forming, and this star is still not finished forming. And this is what astronomers are pondering now: is it's already broken the record. It's three times more massive than any other baby star that we've seen, and they looking at the gas cloud that this baby star is still swaddled in. There, this gas is feeding the baby star still, meaning that it's still growing. And the question now is how large can a star actually grow to? What size can they get? This is the big question yet, and this is breaking records, this particular star.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is our sun, which is a star, is our sun the size it's always been and always will be?
No, I mean it will fluctuate. We're living in a period of the star sun, our sun's lifetime, where it's very stable. It's not changing its size. It's burning its nuclear fuel very, very steadily. At one point in the distant past, when it was young, it was a bloated version of itself when it was younger, and then it slimmed down, and then if we look forward in time, billions of years from now, when the fuel at the center of our sun, at the core, begins to run out, it will start fluctuating in size. That's not going to be a very good time period in terms of life on Earth. That's when basically anybody who's still around will want to get out of Dodge, basically, because with the sun's outer atmosphere expanding and contracting over time, that's not going to be conducive for life on any planet in the solar system, because it fluctuates the temperature and a whole other range of energies. All the energy that's given off by the sun will not be stable, and you need a stable energy source in terms of a star, a parent, a host star, to allow life to evolve and flourish.
Okay, we just have a couple more minutes, but I want to ask about this so-called Earth twin that was discovered. What is it? Where is it?
Right. So this other news this week, which was really fascinating, it's regarding an exoplanet, a planet that's revolving around a star 63 light years away. And in this case, it's a planet that is a giant gas giant, sort of like the Jupiter we have in our own solar system. Except what's interesting, and they've never seen this before, they've never been actually captured the image in terms of the color. And that's what's so intriguing, in that it's a deep cobalt blue. And it's very, basically, it's very reminiscent of what Earth's color is. That if you would look down on Earth from space,
But the composition is very different, right?
I mean, different.
With us, it's mostly the water.
The water is causing the blue coloring on our pale blue dot, as Carl Sagan once said, called our planet. In this case, at 63 light years away, this Jupiter-like world has daytime temperatures that are nearly 1,000 degrees Celsius, and its blue color is basically a result of silicates, basically little particles of glass blowing in this 7,000 kilometer per hour wind. And these silicate particles, these glass particles, form basically this hazy cloud that scatters blue light and gives this planet its really cool blue cobalt color.
Wow.
And that's the first time we've actually been able to measure, and it's thanks to the Hubble Space Telescope, of invisible light and the color of a planet that looks, you know, eerily like ours. But of course, the actual makeup of the planet is totally inhospitable. But we found a mimic of Earth's color.
1,000 degrees Celsius. I don't think we've come up with a sunscreen for that yet.
No, I don't think so. It's not a place where you want to book a vacation, that's for sure.
Unless you got a really, really bad travel agent.
Yeah, but you get a lot of 63 light years away, Peter. You'd get pretty good air miles, I think. The points would be awesome, wouldn't it?
The points would definitely be awesome. Now, does this planet have a name?
It does not have a romantic name. Its name right now is HD189733b.
Yeah.
Not very memorable, is it?
Yeah, the names of planets these days are about as romantic as the names of new cars.
That's right. I wish they would change the astronomers. Gotta step up to the plate with some fantastic, catchy names. That's what we need.
Absolutely. Andrew, always a pleasure speaking with you. People can find out more information about all the things you talk about by going to your website, which is thenightskyguy.com. And you could also find links to articles that you've written for places like National Geographic, correct?
Oh, definitely. They can also sign up for follow me on Twitter or Facebook under The Night Sky Guy, and you can see my stories on National Geographic on a daily basis.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Andrew, for being on the program again.
My pleasure.
Andrew Fizakis, The Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As the American economy struggles to create jobs, the Wall Street Journal says a big reason for the slow economic growth is that entrepreneurs are not taking as many risks today. The question is, why? Are businesses less willing to take a risk, or are they less able? A former Harvard law professor who has spent years studying class action lawsuits says that potential risk takers are less able to start their own companies nowadays. According to his research, they're less able to find the money they need to start their businesses. Massive growth in securities litigation is scaring many potential investors away from new businesses. Let's be fair. Access to investment capital is the lifeblood of an economy. London and New York are two of the world's top capital markets, but in a survey of CEOs, 85% of them preferred London's legal environment because of its predictability and fairness. And that's not good for a struggling U.S. economy. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And Stuart Nolman is indeed here with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, sir.
Hi, Peter. I was going to do an impersonation, but I just don't have the voice for it tonight.
Okay.
Well, if you remember, you know your comedy as well as I do. I was going to evoke the memory of Geraldine Jones.
Well, if you had done that, certainly the devil would have made you do it.
Yeah, well, what you see is what you get, sugar.
Absolutely.
Well, now that we got that segue out of the way, you know, if you're watching TV 40 years ago, the late comic Flip Wilson was one of the most popular entertainers on television. His Flip Wilson show on NBC was a Thursday night viewing habit for millions of Americans and gave such ratings titans as All in the Family and Marcus Welby, M.D. a run for their money. And in a January 1972 Time magazine cover story, he was deemed as TV's first black superstar. And for all that mega success as a comedian and TV star, Flip Wilson could thank, believe it or not, Clara Barton. That's right, Clara Barton, the same Clara Barton who founded the American Red Cross, because it was at PS14 in Jersey City, New Jersey, back in 1942, that 8-year-old Clero Wilson Jr. stepped up to the plate and volunteered to fill in for the lead role in the school's production of Clara Barton of the Red Cross. When the blonde girl originally chosen for the role got an acute case of stage fright. Originally selected to play the role of a wounded Civil War soldier, young Clero gave a new spin to the Clara Barton character, and it marked the beginning of a pioneering career in comedy. Now, from there, it was a long, hard road to stardom for Flip Wilson, with stops in the slums of Jersey City, Air Force bases in the Pacific, the back roads of the segregated Chitlin' Circuit, clubs in the South, to The Tonight Show, and then to his own Flip Wilson show. Now, thanks to the wide popularity of his weekly variety show, which ran from 1970 to 1974, Wilson helped give many black comedians, musicians, and performers national TV exposure that they would not get anywhere else, and helped revive the careers of such comics as Red Fox, Richard Pryor, and George Carlin.
Don't forget Slappy White.
Oh, yeah, Slappy White. That's right. Slappy White. I forgot about that. I love the show. I like the way that the format was, actually, that in the round.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yet these days, Flip Wilson and his contributions to the world of comedy have, for most part, been forgotten, except in the minds of devoted comedy students. However, Kevin Cook's recently released biography, Flip, gives the complete story of Flip Wilson's life and career, and will finally give him the recognition of those contributions to future generations of comedians that is so long overdue.
Plus, sadly, before his death, one of the last things he did was, quite frankly, a very unimpressive CBS sitcom.
Oh, yeah, Charlie and Company.
Yeah.
To compete with The Cosby Show.
Exactly.
Ran only a few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks too long in some cases.
Yeah, enough said about that.
Yeah.
But he was born to a family with negligent parents. And so Wilson and his siblings were broken up by the state authorities and put in foster homes, where the atmosphere was even harsher, and the foster parents profited from payments per child courtesy of the state of New Jersey. However, it was a stint in the U.S. Air Force during the early 50s, where he was stationed in the South Pacific, that Wilson developed his comedy chops. It all began when he was stationed in Guam and suggested to one of his commanding officers how he could help increase attendance and interest in the base's mundane monthly troop information meetings. The topic of that initial meeting was the sex habits of the coconut crab. Such an auspicious beginnings. But it worked. He became a hit. And people kept on, and those information meetings, people were flocking to them because he made them so funny. So when you read the book, actually, you're going to find out that Flip Wilson was not only a talented man and a very generous man, but also he was a very complex individual, and especially after a spotlight was turned off following every performance of the Flip Wilson show. He was a serious self-taught student of comedy. His Bible was Max Eastman's book, Enjoyment of Laughter. And Flip studied that book, the pages of that book, until they fell out Tilly Louie fell out. Now, this also prompted him to write copious notes on countless pads of notepaper, outlining monologues, routines, and sketches, which he later incorporated into his NBC show, as well as his own principles of comedy, which he later called Flip's Laws of Comedy, such as be interesting, be effortless, and to be effortless may require 25 years of effort.
Hmm.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Everyone talks about, the legacy he left with Geraldine Jones, which was an amazing character that he created years and years and years ago. But I'm partial to Reverend Leroy.
Of the Church of What's Happening Now.
Church of What's Happening Now.
Yeah, if you want a good example of that, check out his cameo appearance in the 1974 comedy Uptown Saturday Night. So you get a good idea of what Reverend Leroy was all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great show. And also, here's a little bit of irony. I just wanted to... You know about Geraldine's boyfriend, Killer?
Yes.
Geraldine's boyfriend? Well, on the final Flip Wilson show in 1974, Killer was finally revealed. And guess who played Killer?
Who played Killer?
O.J. Simpson.
Yes.
Ironies of ironies.
Well, the jury's still out on that one.
Oh, yeah. And will be to this day. But Flip is an excellent biography of one of comedy's unsung heroes. It's a classic rags to riches story of how Clitero Wilson Jr. fought his way through poverty, neglect, and racism to comedy and helped bring urban black humor from the Chitlin circuit to large-scale mainstream audiences. Hopefully this book will encourage this current generation of comedians, both black and white, to realize the importance of Flip Wilson and what he brought to the world of contemporary comedy. So basically, with this book, to quote Flip, what you see is what you get, and believe me, you're going to like what you see.
And the book is?
It's called Flip by Kevin Cook. It's published by Viking Press, and it's $28.50.
And if anybody wants to find out similar types of reading material, what do you suggest?
Well, I suggest a book by Mel Watkins called On the Right Side, which was published around 1992, which is an excellent history of black comedy and black comedians from the early days through the Chitlin Circuit, Burt Williams, vaudeville, rap to Richard Pryor. Excellent book. This is like the definitive study of the history of black comedians in America. And also, speaking of Richard Pryor, who was on the Flip Wilson writing staff and helped revive his career, check out Pryor's autobiography called Pryor Offenses, which was published shortly, about a year before Pryor passed away in 2005.
Excellent. And how can people find you, Mr. Nullman?
Well, you won't find me at the Church of What's Happening Now. That's for sure.
I'd have to tell your rabbi.
Yeah, the synagogue of So What's New? You make a living.
Yeah.
So you're not going to find me there.
Okay.
No, but you're going to find me in the West End Times every week in print or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
You're welcome, honey.
Woo! Stuart Nellman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack. We have a few more stories to get to in the Stuff File news before we get to our idiot of the day, so let's get right to it. Kyle Powell served on a grand jury in Brevard County, Florida. After the proceedings, an employee in the courthouse noticed her iPhone was missing from her office. The phone had GPS tracking enabled, which led deputies to Powell's house. Powell was arrested and allegedly confessed to stealing the phone and over $200 in cash while on a break during the jury proceedings. Investigators said Powell also confessed to spending the money on dinner and marijuana. The state attorney's office said it's now trying to figure out if they need to convene a second grand jury. Yeah, now there's a valuable juror for you. He understands justice from both sides of the law. It's becoming a bit of a joke, the amount of stories we get of legal nature out of the state of Florida. What is it with the state of Florida? I don't get it. I don't get it at all. Anyway, it's not duck hunting, but drone hunting. A small Colorado town is considering an ordinance that would create a hunting license for drones. I'm not making this up. Deer Trail is also considering a bounty for hunters who shoot down an unmanned surveillance aircraft. Officials concede they've never actually seen a drone over their town, but they want to make a statement about the use of drones for domestic spying. Officials also recognize that it's against federal law to destroy Uncle Sam's property, but the town clerk says that $25 a year drone hunting licenses could be a novelty moneymaker for Deer Trail. I guess those little remote control helicopters with cameras that kids play with these days will be shot out of the skies at will if this goes through. Never mind the ones that Uncle Sam has. Technically, they are drones, you know. They are. You can buy them at Radio Shack and The Source, among other places. Anyway, I think we have time for one more story before we get to our idiot of the day. I should be mentioning, by the way, that this program, the Stuff File program, is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And it's been a while since I mentioned this, so I will mention it now. You know, you can listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond. It's on demand and on the go. Just about any mobile device that you might have, you can listen to shows via Stitcher Smart Radio. And if you don't have Stitcher, well, you can download it for free at Stitcher.com or at any app store. And on Stitcher Smart Radio, in addition to hearing the Stuff File program, which I know for some of you is all you'll ever want to hear, but besides that, there's about 15,000, at least 15,000 other shows that you can listen to on Stitcher Smart Radio. So what are you waiting for? Just download the app and listen to some great radio via Stitcher Smart Radio. It's the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. An El Paso man was indicted in Woodford County. That was last week for burglary charges, after allegedly choosing the backyard of an off-duty police officer to attempt to crack a safe he'd stolen from a nearby church. 17-year-old James E. Fleming faces up to 15 years if convicted of the felony burglary charge associated with the June 9 incident. Fleming allegedly entered Trinity Lutheran Church through an unlocked door and stole a safe, which he carried less than a block to a residential yard where he tried to open it with a screwdriver. After unsuccessful attempts, he left it in the area shortly after midnight and returned the next day to renew his efforts, where he was confronted by one of the home's residents, an off-duty Bloomington police officer. Fleming was later located by police near the El Paso post office and was taken into custody. He was placed under $50,000 bond at the Woodford County Jail. Now, you know, sometimes determination is something that will do you in. I was thinking of making him an idiot of the day, but I really didn't want to make him an idiot of the day, because even though it's a dumb, silly thing that he did and he got caught in a very silly way, let's be honest, he had no idea that the yard he stopped in belonged to a cop. That's just bad luck on his part, not stupidity. Well, a bit of stupidity, but more bad luck than anything else. But right now, we do have, at this very moment, your idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Matthew Oliver, who is wanted in connection with a robbery, may want to reevaluate his social media presence. By now, everyone ought to know that social media tirades don't make you look good, but that's especially true if you have an active warrant. Matthew of New Port Richey in Florida, everything odd happens in Florida, left a series of irate comments on his own wanted photo for the Pasco County Sheriff's Office that was posted on its Facebook page July 10th as part of the agency's Fugitive of the Day series. Oliver, who is 23, who is wanted in connection with robbery, took to the comments to detail his alibi and challenge the accusations. He was arrested 2 days later. Oliver called the charges slander and claimed he had been set up by a crackhead. He said that he had been in the hospital at the time of the robbery and that the county would be, quote, held responsible, unquote, for posting his photo. He also detailed the circumstances of his hospitalization. Oliver was arrested without resistance July 12th, 2 days after the post and subsequent comment spree. Deputies say although they have had success posting fugitive photos before, this is the first time a suspect had engaged with the agency through its Facebook page as a result of a post. Now, you know the question I'm going to ask, right? Why, oh why, would someone publicly go on social media to debate a warrant for their arrest with the very police that are looking for him? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0205. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0205. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.